You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are here to talk about the year in music, something that we have done on this podcast going back to our original year of 2013. And always a fun one because you have the unique experience of working in the music industry, and I have the experience of listening to music.
There you go. It's like sports.
But opposite. I mean, you have pretty expert level sports knowledge.
Wow. Is that what we're saying here? Expert level sports knowledge, S-tier sports knowledge.
I don't know that I would necessarily
tell that to the Discord.
I don't know that I would necessarily say that you have expert level geography, climate.
It's expert level sports knowledge if you take the entire world as the sample.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I'm saying
if the sample is people who've never seen any sports.
Wow. But I think a lot of people that work professionally in sports don't actually have expert level sports knowledge. Your sports knowledge is clearly superior to my music knowledge.
Don't sell yourself short. You saw Taylor Swift this last weekend.
I saw both Taylor Swift and Billie Eilish in a 3-day span, as we'll probably come up and will definitely come up on this podcast. So, and you saw neither of them, and you say you work in music.
I don't have any Wicked Talk also on the year of music. So you're going to have to carry that completely.
I suppose, that falls under music too. Okay, yeah. I was there. It was rare.
That's my expert level of music knowledge, is noting that Wicked falls under music.
You wanted to talk about a few topics before we get to my annual top 10 songs of the year. And then this year, instead of doing songs, you're doing top 10 emerging artists?
Is that the artist, this is sort of like the generation next for 2025.
Wow.
Artists who I think are going to get much bigger in 2025.
What was the ESPN, the magazine cover?
Wasn't it ESPN? Was it Next? It was ESPN Next, I think. Eric Lindros, he's going to be huge.
Alex Rodriguez, right?
Uh-huh.
Was Kobe?
I think it was Kobe, yes.
It was either Kobe or KG. And then who the NFL player on there was, I haven't the slightest clue. All right, but before that, you wanted to start by talking about a few topics, beginning with pop music. Pretty broad.
Well, it was a big year in pop music. I don't know if you noticed.
I did. Not only did I see those acts, I saw both Sabrina Carpenter and Chapel Roan at Outside Land. So a high percentage of the world's biggest pop stars.
And so I'm kind of curious, basically the way that things have worked, and this is probably the case dating back, you know, dozens of years, but I feel like we've had sort of one predominant genre, and I'm trying to really comprehend exactly what it means to society overall, because I don't think there's a coincidence, some of these things. So during the pandemic, we had a huge pop punk revival, right? 2021, 2020, in that range, pop punk was kind of the genre. You know, bands like Panic at the Disco, Fall Out Boy had huge moments. And then there was sort of a younger generation of pop punk artists that started to bubble up and get record deals and become big. These trends have moved extraordinarily quickly also, with just how fast. And I think that probably says something about culture, and maybe also says something about my second topic that I want to talk about as well.
I mean, country seems like an example of that. It seems like country like had its moment and then kind of faded. All within 2024. I mean, maybe you trace its origins back longer, but
I'm not. Well, yeah, you definitely would trace its emergence back longer. And so then last
year, I'm aware the country music has existed prior to 2024, but like the pop country crossover moment.
I don't know if that's over. I guess.
Okay. It feels like it's receded a little bit. Is that fair?
I think it probably is fair. However, well, I guess so. I want to go through this, right? Pop punk, huge thing. Hardcore had a big year, right? Turnstile had a massive year. Hardcore still had a big year this last year. We're not really going to talk about it much, but Knocked Loose became a pop band ultimately. And I think it was probably one of the strangest. It was one of the heaviest, really big releases that we've seen in a long time. I think Turnstile and Knocked Loose, kind of those two bands being in, like, you know, Knocked Loose is playing Jimmy Kimmel. And that's something that really I don't think had happened on such a big stage since the early 2000s, 90s, a band as heavy as they are. But that's not exactly what we're talking about. And then country music became massive. I do think if we want to trace a trend around these things, because all these things matter culturally, right? The reason that music becomes popular, certain genres of music become popular, they aren't coincidences. And the pop thing in general this last year, it might have been sort of a response to how popular country music had become. And that there are a bunch of people who are just not interested in country kind of being the predominant genre. And the voices in pop were definitely more progressive voices in pop music, right? Chappell Roan is a different looking pop star. Not, I don't want to say ever, because, you know, there's Lady Gaga, right? But the topics that Chappell Roan is talking about, ultimately even Sabrina Carpenter and Charlie XCX, are, I guess I would say, more progressive than the topics that pop artists were talking about, say, in the early mid-2000s, right? The last time that pop music was really, really popular.
I mean, pop music is always really popular, but like the central defining genre.
Most important artists, yeah. Right? Like, I think this was the last year that we had, and you have to take both Sabrina Carpenter, Chappell Roan, Charlie XCX, right? Under this umbrella. All of them have slightly different backgrounds, but they all, Charlie XCX was a big, all of them were big artists before this last year. They moved to the level of astronomical within the year, right?
I mean, I didn't really know Sabrina Carpenter before this year, if we're being honest. Like, if you had like explained to me her story, I would have been like, oh, that sounds vaguely familiar to me. Chappell Roan, I didn't know at all. Charlie XCX, like, I knew about, but definitely like hadn't listened to her music that much.
That's what I'm saying, though, is there's like, right, Nonsense is one of the biggest songs from Sabrina Carpenter, right? You're aware of that?
Previous to this year, is what you're saying?
Or in general, also. But that came out on the album that came out in 2022.
Uh-huh.
It's not like Sabrina Carpenter wasn't unknown, but the degrees to these things are, there's such a huge difference between kind of bubbling pop artist. Chappell Roan played like a crazy sold out Crocodile show in 2023. You know, it's not like Chappell Roan wasn't unknown, but there's a difference between unknown and people lining up 24 hours before Capitol Block Party opens to go see you, or
which
selling
is
out the entire festival.
How you become best new artist
at the Grammys. Yes. Well, sorry. I do think that is, it is funny when people gripe about best new artist at the Grammys, and I'm like, the Grammys is for Jan. You know what I mean?
I mean, I'm aware.
These are all new artists to Jan. She probably, who's nominated for that?
The list is Benson Boone,
yep.
Sabrina, Dochi, Krongbin,
Krongbin,
I don't know if I pronounced that right, Ray, Chappell Roan, Shibuzi, and Teddy Swims.
Yeah, so okay, I want to come back to that also. After, because of just how long so many of those artists have been, and this is always the case with Best New Artist Grammys, but I actually think this group of artists has been around even longer than previous generations.
Shibuzi released an album in 2018.
That, we're going to talk about it. Don't worry. But that's the thing. It's new artists at a major, major level, right?
So they're basically doing, it's new to you.
Selling out the Crocodile is not, that doesn't matter to Jan.
I'm aware.
Or even like Krungbin. Krungbin is an extraordinarily popular band. Jan still doesn't know who they are, right?
Right.
But so I think in the last year, basically what happened was country music became kind of the predominant genre. Everybody recorded their country songs. They came out in 2024. 2023 was the country year. 2024, it is not a coincidence to me that Beyonce, who's always been a pop, R&B, hip-hop leaning artist, right, released ultimately a country record in 2024. It also is not a coincidence that Chappell Roan went on Saturday Night Live and the first new song that she's released, right, since Good Luck Babe came out, is, it hasn't been released yet, that she teased, was a country song. These things are still true right now. Like, country music is not a less popular genre. There's a Jelly Roll Post Malone tour that is hitting T-Mobile Park next summer, right? Like, it's not that these things have faded. I think there's that point. A lot of times what we talk about in society is that, like, extra 2%, which is, everything is super, super popular. Like, everything that is super, super popular, people will be like, oh, that's over. you know? And it's like, right. No, literally millions of people still care about this. It's the trend, basically, is what people are talking about. But the year that Sabrina Carpenter, Charlie XCX, Chappell Roan had was more than just the trend. They elevated even beyond that.
Agreed.
I think it's also, you know, it happened in a year that I think people were a little bit tired of Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift had kind of...
Not in Vancouver, they weren't. I mean, actually, maybe the people of Vancouver were. The people traveling to Vancouver.
This is the extra 2% piece that I'm talking about.
Yes.
Taylor Swift's record was still extraordinarily successful, but the cultural impact that it had was not anywhere near the last Taylor Swift album.
I don't know that I think that people were tired of Taylor Swift. I think maybe Taylor Swift couldn't move the needle to this in the same way because she had just done it too much before.
She'd reached like max saturation.
And I don't think it was a backlash necessarily.
I mean, it could literally be that is sort of, if you trace it back, the country music thing happens in 2022. So I guess I'm going to talk about these three trends in a row and how I'm thinking about it is pop punk happens because people are locked down. They're like looking for comfort food, right? The bands that are sort of like pop punk, because it's not going quite as far back as say like Green Day. Blink-182 had a huge year, but looking to music from their youth, right? And that was early 2000s, 2006 territory, maybe a little bit earlier, right? When it was Panic at the Disco, Fall Out Boy were having their first initial surge in sort of like the generation after 90s pop punk. That happens in lockdown. The country, all of a sudden, around 2022, and I think we see this politically, became way more conservative overall. And I think that the country music thing is not, I don't think it caused it. I think it is a response. I think it was a sign that that was happening in the country. Post-pandemic, people also were looking for a little bit of comfort food, right? And there was something about Americana that people were looking for. And country music, basically, it gobbled up other genres while that was happening. There's artists like Benson Boone can tangentially sort of fall under country also. People who would have previously been considered pop all of a sudden are country artists, right? I think we talked about that on last year's podcast.
Wait, Benson Boone was born and raised in Monroe? Did I know that? Was I aware of that information?
What's Monroe? Monroe?
Yes.
Pronounced it terribly wrong?
That's the joke pronunciation of it. I thought that was an inside joke between us, but apparently it isn't.
No, I had no idea that he was from Monroe. But so you hear music that was ultimately not like could be viewed as pop music, could be viewed as whatever, singer-songwriter. All of a sudden it's country, right? It gets lumped into that. Yes. And I think that is part of the country as a whole was becoming much more conservative. Again, we are talking at that extra 2%. This last year, I think it might have actually been a Taylor Swift swing that there was something about people were primed to really care about pop music overall, pop female pop singer songwriters, right? That is something that people really cared about. And at the perfect time appeared Sabrina Carpenter with an excellent single, Chappell Roan with an excellent single, and Charlie XCX with an excellent album, all in one year. And if I had to rank pop music power rankings, because that's kind of what we had for this last year, right? And those 3 to 4 have been kind of going back and forth. There's other people who've bubbled in there, right? Dua Lipa's still a very large artist. I think right now, and tell me if you agree with this or not, the pop music power rankings are, number one is Sabrina Carpenter.
Yeah.
Number two is Charlie XCX. And number three is Chappell Roan. And I think hotness-wise, I think all three of those are hotter than Taylor Swift.
Yeah, I think there was a moment during the summer where Chappell Roan was number one.
Absolutely.
Before Sabrina, even though Sabrina Carpenter had the song of the summer already before her album came out. Like, I mean, I saw them on back-to-back nights at Outside Lands, and the crowd for Chappell Roan was far bigger and far more engaged. And like people dressed up, you know, people are wearing pink, everything. Like it was in the event, even though she was not the headliner, as was the case at, you know, all these festivals where she was booked relatively early before she had surged in popularity. But it was the highlight of the weekend.
Chappell Roan.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like she kind of saved the U.S. Summer Festival in a lot of ways this past year. It's a market that's a little bit dying, U.S. Summer Festival. And Chapel Roan, having an artist like that play all these festivals meant that the amount of tickets that those festivals sold is carrying them through at least to the next year right now. But it was sort of like every festival there was, it was like, do you have Chapel Roan? Yes, it's going to be massive. Do you not have Chapel Roan? No, then it's not going to do well. It's going to bomb. And I do think that's probably still the case with Chapel Roan, despite the fact that I think Sabrina Carpenter is on top in terms of power rankings. I think the culture around Chapel Roan, it's funny because again, it's like everybody hates Chapel Roan now, right? That's like you feel like there's a backlash. The reality is that we are talking about just that 2%, you know, that small amount of people who are like, oh, I'm annoyed with whatever Chapel Roan said, right? And ultimately, this is such a small group of people for one of the biggest pop artists in the entire world.
I mean, I do think there's also like a tastemaker element of, you know, it can be a relatively small percentage of people, but they seem very influential, especially online.
Those people who are talking about it.
Yes.
I mean, I think the other thing that we learned is being online just doesn't matter. That is a thing that we learned in this last year. The internet is not a real place.
Some of us had that lesson previously, and some of us argued with other people on this podcast about that particular lesson, I would
That the internet
say.
isn't a real place. I mean, if you
Yeah.
look at monthly listeners wise, Sabrina
That
Carpenter, which I don't.
momentum isn't real in politics as well as sports.
Sabrina Carpenter has 81 million monthly listeners. Chapel Roan has 41 million. Like, it's actually a pretty huge difference between those two. There's a little bit of like timing for when the songs came out, but I think Espresso is a bigger song than any of the Chapel Roan songs.
I mean, Espresso is undoubtedly the song of the summer, with all due respect to They Not Like Us, but what was the biggest song of the year?
What was the biggest song of the year?
Yeah.
I probably was Espresso. I don't
Yeah, I
know.
think it probably was too.
And so I'm kind of curious what it says if it's just a Taylor Swift response that this became the pop music summer. And so Charli XCX was an interesting one also. I remember when she announced the tour with Troye Sivan and was playing Climate Pledge, and I was like, wow, that is really aggressive, Charlie. And it didn't sell that well out of the gate. You know, the sales weren't because they announced it before Brat came out. And the impact that Brat had, again, this is one of those things where it's like the internet isn't a real place, but it also matters. You know what I mean? Like there are so many more people beyond the internet, but and I think that's where Taylor Swift, like the reality is, Taylor Swift dominates all of these people in the places that aren't the internet. Taylor Swift has been doing this for 20 years, right? It runs so much deeper. And she's kind of captured by all parts. Charli XCX is an artist who crushed the internet this last year, right? Sabrina Carpenter did amazing on TikTok. The amount of basically like, what is that song called? Not Positions. Oh my God. But the amount of TikToks that Sabrina Carpenter generated from her tour was ridiculous. Charli XCX kind of dominated the internet and has for a couple of generations. Taylor Swift, I think, ultimately is at a level that is still completely surpasses any of those artists because, again, I think it goes way beyond that, right?
I
It
mean, she
goes
still has
everywhere.
more. It's also the internet, but she still has more monthly listeners than
No,
Sabrina does.
it's both. It is both of those things. Like, she's still the most famous artist in the entire world,
It's a
right?
little bit like, and I hesitate to make this comparison because I think it's overblown, but the idea that, like, you know, if you're trying to repeat as MVP, it's harder to win than if you're trying to win for the first time.
But she's also trying to win like her sixth MVP
Agreed.
or something. I don't think it's necessarily that. But again, it's that small percent that we're really talking about. And I think that's the thing that I learned this year is we spend so much time thinking about the couple of haters in the comments, right? And we ignore the 10,000 likes,
Oh,
you
yeah.
know? And we spend so much time thinking about the trend line and don't look at the picture overall. And I think pop music was kind of it's a little bit of that year, right? Like we're talking at the trend line, but for somebody like Chapel Roan, it was different. And I think that's the thing that was really interesting is I remember when it bubbled up at Coachella, right? And started becoming like Chapel started becoming really big, you know, more than just like we would talk about her. It's like, oh, this is happening in a major, major way. And I think that was the thing that was surprising about these pop artists is we're so used to different pop artists coming up, having one song, and, you know, being like popular, still a big artist, but ultimately kind of like fading away or entering into, you know, like Addison Rae might be this, right? Like there's so many pop artists who have huge songs, massive songs, who are still popular, but they don't reach the kind of fervor that somebody like Chappell Roan generated this year. And I think that fan base was what, I do think that is, like, even though I think Sabrina Carpenter is probably a more popular artist in the aggregate, I think Chappell Roan has a more rabid fan base, you know? And yeah, like those numbers don't need to be in the millions. If it's outside lands, it can be 50,000 people. And those people are going to be more rabid about going to see her than Sabrina Carpenter.
Do you have more on this, or can I pose to you my pop music question?
Yes.
So at the Taylor Swift show in Vancouver, Gracie Abrams was opening her for her last week. And I have never listened to Gracie Abrams music before, but it's like, all of these are good. All these songs are good. She has a terrific singing voice. And my question was, have we just sort of perfected pop music now, where like, as long as you bring a certain level of competence to the table, like the industry is just going to find good songs for you and put you in a position to succeed?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I mean, I don't, if it were that easy, it would happen more often than it does.
But I think the reason it doesn't happen more often than it does is because there's only so much attention. It's the limiting factor is not quality songs. The limiting factor is attention.
How quality are the Gracie Abrams songs? Like,
what? I don't know. I can't give you a quantify that.
I mean, Gracie Abrams is massively popular.
She is.
This is
very
not like
popular.
An underground artist we're talking
about.
She's got
43 million listeners.
Yeah. And also being on tour of Taylor Swift has helped a number of these artists as well.
Yes.
Basically, just kind of like the Taylor Swift runoff has been huge for people who've supported Taylor Swift, right? Sabrina Carpenter. I don't think that I would say that we've perfected pop music. No.
Okay.
It would be too easy. And honestly, these trends are going to change. That's the thing. Right now, something seems permanent, and there are a lot of festivals who are looking around and they're saying to themselves, who is the next Chappell Roan? Who is the next Sabrina Carpenter? And do you know what they're finding?
No.
Nothing. Exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
I mean, I just wrote about this on the NBA last week. Like, people are like, are the Hawks or Rockets going to be this year's Pacers because of the fact that they made it to the NBA Cup semifinals and then the Pacers went to the conference finals? And it's like, no, probably no one is going to be the next Pacers because it's an extremely unlikely thing.
The other thing about it is sort of the mechanism for how that happened, right? Like Olivia Rodrigo, who's still, you know, in this conversation or whatever, slightly different artist, but came out of nowhere, became very popular very quickly, right? She didn't play the indie festivals that Chappell Roan plays. You know, Gracie Abrams is not going to play Capitol Hill Block Party. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Gracie Abrams can play some of the bigger festivals, but I think that's the other piece, is when you're looking at it and you're like, where do I find this person? The way that Chappell Roan built was Chappell Roan built from basically, she built like an indie artist and kind of did it touring one by one, songs growing, word of mouth, those things. Gracie Abrams is building by touring Taylor fucking Swift.
Right.
You know what I mean? And having an extraordinarily famous dad. So that way of doing things is just, it's impossible to kind of replicate what happened with Chappell Roan. Like, yes, I'm sure like those songs are good. I am skeptical whether Gracie Abrams will be a like lifelong pop artist that is still relevant in 10 years.
But I don't think you're understanding my point, which is just that like pop songs can't miss to the same degree. Like, that doesn't mean they're all going
to
be popular.
Talk to Katy Perry and tell me pop songs can't miss. Katy Perry had every bit of resources in the entire world, right? And had some of the biggest misses of anybody for the last year.
I can't say I've listened to any of them, so maybe.
Exactly. But like, that hypothetically is a big record, right?
Yeah.
And if you look at like her Spotify, none of the songs from the new album, from 143, apparently it's called, are in the top 10 Katy Perry songs. Like, yes, the plays are in the millions for a bunch of them. Woman's World has 46 million plays, but you know, there's Gracie Abrams songs with a lot more than that from this last year. anyway, I don't think I would say it takes a very particular set of circumstances for there to be a massive pop song. And just it takes a combination of
I still think you're focusing too much on success and not enough on just like
quality. How can you judge quality without judging success? That's the only way to judge pop music. There's no objective quality, right?
I mean, I'm sure that there is some sort of objective quality. It's difficult to measure. I'm just saying, I think the industry like has a formula that is very good right now. That's what I'm saying. Like,
it might be a
they've
post-
done all the research. They know the things
but
that work.
This isn't. I think it's more you're only seeing the successes. Does that make sense?
I suppose so. I guess the other part of it is
there's
like,
artists who money have been spent behind that it doesn't work. And again, if it were able to work as easily as that, like you would do it with cheaper artists. You know what I mean?
Yes, that's a fair point. People say they made Hove, make a new Hove.
Yeah. And but I mean, I think there is something to maybe a lot of pop music sounds like Taylor Swift music. You know, like we are sort of primed.
Because the only thing I was thinking about is like Taylor Swift, like, you know, indie rock is like not rock is not a genre that is at the forefront of music anymore. But like Taylor Swift worked with Aaron Dessner and, you know, sure. Yeah. So basically like pop has just subsumed a lot of these elements of rock. And I don't think, was that the case 20 years ago?
I don't know if it was not the case. I think it probably is always sort of the case that they merge into one. I would say that country also has basically, I mean, we talked about this last year, but classic rock is now country music somehow, in a strange way. Like basically there's a continuum of people who like, say like AC/DC and also like Morgan Wallen.
Yeah.
Like that is a now like a linear. I still think you're undervaluing the cultural pieces of it.
I probably am.
There are so many artists who it basically takes the combination of like pop music is both right now the most decentralized it has ever been and also the most susceptible to payola it's ever been. Both of those things are true at the exact same time. And I think it actually probably the last time this was the case was maybe like the 60s, was because basically the
so TikTok is now the DJs who aren't getting paid off and are just playing the songs they like and are influential.
But TikTok is also the DJs who are getting paid off.
Oh, wow.
Does that make sense?
So TikTok is all the DJs.
TikTok is all of the things at once because you can pay, there's like payola doesn't, you can pay somebody to use your song in a video and that's not payola, right? It's marketing. And that shit works better than any other mechanism has ever worked. Maybe paying like to have your songs on TRL in the late 90s, 2000s, but like that TRL didn't, it put you onto new things, but that was all paid, right? It was all corporate money. Every single artist that was on there was a major label artist. Now, it's so decentralized that you can have an artist who is not signed to a major label have a massive song because of how quickly something can take off in TikTok and make it happen. But at the same time, like there is sort of a room for things that you can keep in your head at once. Like there's a room for how many songs become massive pop songs. But things can start in totally left field ways and then become massive pop songs. But I also think like Charli XCX, that album wasn't supposed to be as big as it was, if that makes sense.
I mean, how much of it do you think was the memes?
I think it was partially the memes. I think it also was, there was a very successful TikTok dance. Charli XCX thanked the person who made the Apple dance, right? And had them at like her New York shows. Like that stuff. And I don't think that was paid for explicitly, but a lot of TikTok dances are paid for and they don't work.
Okay.
So,
all right.
If you were to look at, I was just curious about this, looking at like today's top hits, and the industry resisted Charli XCX to a certain extent. They didn't want it to be as big as it was. Same with Chaperone, right? The industry resisted these artists before they adopted them. You kind of have to prove it still for a little bit. And Chapel Roan, like Spotify locked her out of a lot of the biggest playlists for a long time, and the fan base had to get there. Charlie XCX is the same thing. And it's kind of like those playlists were reserved for the artists that had been doing it for a really, really long time. But like Shaboozy was a song that sort of kind of came out of nowhere, right? Shaboozy wasn't necessarily destined to be as big as he was. Tommy Richmond, that's not a major label release, Million Dollar Baby. And that's a song that just kind of, it shows the democratization if you have a song like that and how far it can go.
Okay.
So Dasha is another huge one. I mean, I kind of want to talk about these artists in a second, but the Dasha is a completely independent label. I'm friends with the people who run the label, and it's like, it's just a distributor. And the song became one of the biggest songs of the year. And that's, it's kind of incredible how that can happen. But at the same time, you could basically pay to make a song as massive. You could give a song every opportunity that it's going to have, right? Like the, what is the Gracie Abrams song called? Like there's been hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars spent on making that song popular. That's so true, right? Like there's been, so, and you see it so many different places, right? It's going to be in fucking movie trailers for all time. But it has to have the like actual connectivity beyond that, because people spend money on tons of songs and that don't become those tracks we're talking about. People spend money on shit that fails all the time, because if it works, then the pile of money is so big, and it's so big forever.
Okay.
When you have a song like that, it doesn't go away, basically.
Anything else on pop?
Well, I also want to talk about the country piece of it, because again, the Chapel Roan song being ostensibly a quote unquote country song, right? And the year that Post Malone, I think Post Malone is a person who's genuinely interested in classic country music. And I think, but I don't want to judge any sort of like, what is the authenticity or something of it? These things, it still comes down to capitalism, ultimately. And the way to make that happen, the way that these artists saw it, they might see the future wrong, but the way that many of these artists saw the world heading into this year, once they found success, was saying, I'm going to pivot to country, at least to a certain extent, because those people that we talked about, the people who are offline, the extra people who are there, that is, and country is obviously a deep and rich genre, right? With hundreds of years of American history, it and hip hop are kind of like the two most true American art forms, right? But, or musical art forms. But there's a capitalistic perspective of,
wait, we're not going to say R&B?
I mean, I guess R&B also, but I don't know if I necessarily...
I mean, the R&B. Blues is clearly an American origin.
Okay. But like, is the blues a relevant genre right now? I'm talking about relevant genres right now.
Okay. I get what you're saying.
And the same, like R&B, like basically R&B, it is a genre unto itself, but it's also hip hop. Like SZA is like an R&B artist, but she's also a hip hop artist, and she's also a pop artist.
I mean, part of it is just that these labels are so fluid and meaningless.
I think country is a specific signifier. Hip hop is a specific signifier, right? There are sonic qualities to both of those and visual qualities to both of those that there aren't necessarily in, I mean, there might be in the blues, but like, it's just not been a relevant genre for like 50 years. Except when it's a traveler.
your excitement about making that joke.
But I do think there's a capitalistic perspective of people being like, I'm going to add more country elements to this to try to capture that much larger of an audience. It's something Taylor Swift didn't have to do because she started there, right? She started there and kind of built up that fan base already.
I was wondering whether there's going to be kind of a return to country Taylor album soon.
It would come off so extraordinarily crass if there was, in my opinion. I think it'd be harder for her. And I don't know if this is what people want. For, again, the people who are on the internet, I don't know if those people are asking for the country version of these artists. But their pocketbooks are looking for the country version of these artists and trying to find longer-term success. And that's ultimately what pop music is it's a capitalistic genre, right? The goal is to get as big as possible overall. That's what, like, what that is the one central piece of it being pop music. There are sonic qualities also, but pop basically just means whatever is the most popular at the time. Right. And the thinking is from a lot of these people is like, there's this completely untapped fan base if I'm even slightly country. And sometimes it's worked. Post Malone is a bigger artist now than he was 3 years ago by being a country artist.
Yeah.
Like Post Malone, I mean, he just probably wouldn't have, he might have toured with Jelly Roll, I don't know. But the Post Malone Jelly Roll tour, like, it's going to make a fuckload of money. But I do think people have been wrong about this a little bit. And that's where it comes up to our next genre topic.
By the way, I would say that the way that Taylor Swift could do this without it seeming calculated is to do Taylor's version of her early albums instead of doing Taylor's version of her more recent albums. So, all right. But you want, next up, you wanted to talk about hip hop.
And that's I think, where people, I think people are sometimes bad at reading the tea leaves of where things are going. And one day you might wake up and find yourself with hip hop back again.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
No, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying how completely unexpected it was. I'm going to say, I think this was March 22nd, 2024. And it's funny because there's been so many songs that have been bigger. But if you recall the moment that hip hop returned on national relevance, right? And the thing is, hip hop, like, you could find so many successful rappers. You look at Spotify, right? You look at the deals that labels are giving out. There's so much fucking money going to hip hop overall.
The kids that Luca is going to see?
The artists that Luca is going to see?
Yes.
Yeah. No, there's so many massive hip hop artists, right? Playboi Carti is like, it's, Playboi Carti has probably as hardcore of a fan base as Chappell Roan has. It just doesn't, like, does that surprise you to hear?
No, not really.
I think
Playboi Carti is big enough that it's like, I know who he is. But like, Boss Mandela popped up on SportsCenter the other night before his album came out. And like, I was not familiar with that individual. And there he was front and center on Spotify when it came out yesterday.
Huge
and,
right now.
Yeah.
That's how, so hip hop has still, but also we're in the post March 22nd, 2024 world right now.
Where were you on March 22nd, 2024?
But the Carti audience has been happening and is as hardcore. It's just hip hop kind of makes some sense as a slightly underground genre, right? That like it operates in a better way as a slightly underground genre.
Of course.
Hip hop. Because when you, I don't want to talk about quality, and now I can look back on it fondly because of nostalgia, but I'm like, Ja Rule and Ashanti fucking killed hip hop. But the, on March 22nd, 2024, I'm going to look up the date that that's right.
Yes. That was the day of Like That. Yes.
To Like That. Future and Metro Boomin have a record coming out, right? You're like, all right, that seems fine. And the Kendrick Lamar verse on Like That started everything. And it was so fast how quickly it happened. I remember looking at my phone in the morning and being like, what happened? You know, because it's something that like it just spread so quickly. And it was exactly what people were looking for. The best rapper of all time, all of a sudden reestablished himself as the best rapper of all time. And he went after other people. They talk about a big three, ridiculously talking about a big three of Drake, J. Cole, and Kendrick Lamar. And Kendrick, again, was like, fuck that. In a way that he's done a couple of times ever. He's done this a few times, but this is probably the most important time for Kendrick. And it's funny how it started and all of the things that bubbled up after. I don't think Kendrick knew necessarily where it was going to go, right? Again, he's done this before, and this time, people decided, Drake in particular, decided to come at him. J. Cole did also, and then conceded the battle.
He did the Homer Simpson, man.
Yeah.
He came out of the bushes and he came right back, went right back in. And yes, a great decision on his part. Because he did not end up suffering the heavy losses that Drake did.
Including like the freaking lawsuit all the way down that far.
The lawsuit is definitely the equivalent of the Ohio legislators who are trying to make it illegal to plant flags on fields. Did you see this?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So good.
But so, like, the control verse was important, and it was the most important, not the most important diss track, but it was, again, a similar situation. It could have gone like that, right? It could have gone like the control verse, which was a huge deal at the time, still mattered after. But this instead set off one of probably the most important year for rap music in, I don't even know. I was asking Luca. I was like, the most recent Kendrick album is the most important hip hop album since what? And, you know, there were a few things that we talked about, like Astroworld. I remember being a very big deal. Like the Views Drake record was kind of a big deal. Life of Pablo. But I mean, we're talking about almost a generation of kids on a national level. He said Igor, and I was like, just the cultural impact of that, it's not even close to the impact that GNX has had. And so, like that, Kendrick has this verse just coupled in there. And the most amazing thing about it is like the Future parts at the beginning, I'm just like, dog, just can you not, right? Like, this is no offense to Future. It's almost a sign of respect that Kendrick was willing to do it on a Future track. Right. And he obviously talked about Atlanta later on Not Like Us, but like to be able to do it on that release was like, all right, like this is a level of respect for these artists, for Metro Boomin and Future, to do it on this song. But also, I'm going to tear this motherfucker down, right? I'm going to come out and remind people it has been too long. And the last Kendrick record didn't have that same kind of cultural impact, you know? And I think sometimes you need to show up and remind people. And that's what he did here.
I mean, I would say what's interesting about it, like you'll recall that my response to the control verse is that people were overrating it because the only reason the control verse was so good is because Kendrick had the body of rap that he did, that he could say what he said on the control verse and have it be legitimate. Because anyone, you know, can do a battle rap. You have to like have the ability to back it up. But now I have changed my mind that Kendrick is like very good at rapping. But specifically when he's battling with somebody, it's just on another level.
I mostly agree with that, but also he's just so clearly the best rapper of all time. And like, okay, if you're taking Jay-Z's definition of the best rapper of all time, but the real shit you get when you bust down my lines, add that to the fact I went plat a bunch of times, times that by my influence on pop culture, I'm supposed to be number one on everybody's list. Like, that is Kendrick Lamar, boom, 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 boom. 1, 2, 3, right there. And he's better than all of these artists at those three things. Some people might be slightly better. Like Drake might be more popular, right? Add back to the fact I went plat a bunch of times, right? Drake might have sold more, but Kendrick even attacks him for that, right? Right there on the Like That verse. He's like, Prince outlived Mike Jack, you know? And it is a thing that I've been thinking about, Kendrick framing himself as the Prince versus Michael Jackson in this argument, because indisputably, Prince is a cooler artist than Michael Jackson over time, right? Prince has everything in a way that Michael Jackson is maybe the greatest singer of all time, right? Singer, dancer, songwriter in a lot of ways, performer. Prince could do it all. He could do all the shit that Michael Jackson could do, and he could shred fucking guitar, and he could play every single instrument, right?
And he was a surprisingly good basketball player, and he could make pancakes.
And he could hoop. Like, I feel like the lore of Prince is, and Kendrick gets that, right? He's like the money, power, and the respect. And the respect is what I literally was listening to. I listened to Purple Rain like an insane amount this year. I probably listened to it today. But just like, I was listening to it and I was like, this is so clearly the best album ever made. Because you just go through it and you're like, oh my God, that's on this too? Just one by one. Like somehow the worst song on the, Baby I'm a Star is probably the worst song. But like you're listening to it, it's like the Beautiful Ones, and you're like, yeah, this is like a little bit slow. And then all of a sudden you're like, this is the best moment on the entire album. Like, it is just straight up 10 out of 10, no notes for Purple Rain.
You know what's amazing? You know, there's like I think this is the U2 theory specifically of like, put all the best songs at the front of the album. And Prince saved Purple Rain for the last track.
Because he was making an album.
Yeah.
Fuck the Joshua Tree. Prince was making an album with an arc, you know? Also, it mirrored a movie. At the same time, this has never happened that you would have a perfect album paired with an extraordinarily successful movie. Anyway, Kendrick Lamar is aware of that information. So to have the year that Kendrick had, and ultimately...
By the way, the disrespect to 8 Mile here.
It's not a perfect, like, it's also not just Eminem on 8 Mile. I actually think it's very, very impressive, like,
yes.
what Eminem did. It goes to show how just dominant Eminem was at the time, that he could, like, one of his best songs ever is just, like, a song from his movie,
yeah.
you know? And maybe, like, the song that has kind of, like, withstood time the most.
Both weirdly influential for the University of Washington football program.
That is true. Eminem and Prince.
Well, this song is from 8 Mile specifically, right?
No, they don't play Lose Yourself. No.
Oh, they play When I Collapse.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's from the Eminem show.
Ah.
Anyway, so that moment happening into the rest of the year that Kendrick Lamar had, this is the most important year for hip-hop since, again, it's been a while. I don't know what the exact year was, but it has been a while. And ultimately, it's primarily thanks to Kendrick Lamar, but Rising Tide Lifts All Ships, and the people that you're talking about, the Boss Mandilo, Big X the Plug, people like that. This summer, I went to, and I'll talk a little bit more about this later in the Artist Watch, I went to go see this artist, Ken Carson, with Luca. And I was like, the audience that Ken Carson has is, again, basically, like, this summer, there's Chapel Rowan, that's the mainstream one, there's Ken Carson. And these kids are motherfucking rabid about it, right? So, 2 sold out nights at Showbox Soto. They could have sold out 4 more. You know, it's one of those things where I'm like, how many tickets could you sell for this? And the answer, there is an answer, but the answer is a lot higher than you think, if that makes sense. That you could just keep going for this audience. And that is how rabid these kids are who are in college and who are in high school about this music. Does it have an impact on culture? Absolutely not, right? At this point, Ken Carson exists within this pocket, but it is so important within this pocket. And I think that's kind of what hip hop is right now for a lot of artists. And Kendrick Lamar all of a sudden re-stretched out the ways that you can go. And so he does that in To Not Like Us, which is the most important rap song probably of the millennium, right?
I'd have to think about that some, but probably.
There are other ones, but in this moment right now in 2024, it feels like the most important rap song since the year 2000. And then to follow it up with GNX in the way that he did, just, you know, like,
correct me if I'm wrong, this is currently, we're still in the Will.i.am, right?
Yes. Just like boom, 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 all in a row. And again, like, Kendrick hadn't fallen off, but people weren't talking about Kendrick that much. And to do that into the Super Bowl performance, right? Announcing the Super Bowl. It was like, I remember seeing the video when Kendrick announced it, right? Shooting the footballs off. And I was like, oh, this motherfucker wants to be huge. All of a sudden, this isn't Kendrick Lamar playing around anymore. This is Kendrick Lamar being like, I'm going to be not just the greatest rapper of all time. I want to be the biggest rapper of all time now also. So it's kind of an incredible thing to happen going on, I don't know, 12 years into his career or something like that. To be an old man. He's only 2 years younger than I am.
I mean, Aaron Aflalo is long out of the NBA by this point.
Yeah, Section 80 was 2011. I thought it was 2014, Section 80. So we're going on 13 to 14 years of Kendrick Lamar right now. And honestly, like, he's had huge impacts throughout time, but it felt like it was sort of waning a little bit. It had been so long between Damn and Mr. Morale, and Mr. Morale had, like, big songs, but it wasn't that important of a record culturally. And now GNX, it was funny, like, what did Pitchfork give GNX? It was such an important album that them giving it anything less than, like, a 6.6, and it's just like, you're showing how unimportant you are as a platform right now. I get it. I understand you're trying to be critical. This motherfucker is everywhere, right? It is all over the place. And it's not just one song. It's not just like a pop record where there's one song. This is, nobody gives a shit what you have to say about this album, Pitchfork. I'm sorry. This is a 10.0 record because it is deep and it is huge and it's good. And it was one of those albums that, to have this kind of year, I felt like Kendrick Lamar basically saved hip-hop is the wrong way to put it, but hip-hop is so much more part of our national consciousness now than it was for the last quite a few years. Again, pop music had taken over. We might have a very big hip-hop 2025.
Is it a bold prediction?
Well, no, that the most popular American genre is going to be popular.
right, the last topic you wanted to hit on was the role and the value of experience.
Yeah, and I think you can kind of take all these artists that we've talked about as an example of this. So everybody gets, we're now in, again, I actually think the impact of Spotify making artists huge, I think Spotify is less important than it was a couple of years ago.
Do you think Spotify, based on what you were saying about TikTok, is now reacting to TikTok rather than being the
I
cause?
don't think
Okay.
that is a fact. That's not an opinion. I'm not opining on that. Spotify is reacting to what happens on TikTok. And you could basically look at all of the top, like if you look at today's top hits, and some of their biggest playlists are just viral hits, right? Again, we've talked about this a ton, but I do feel like this is the year, and I've talked about this with artists. If TikTok weren't important, the biggest artists in the world wouldn't be posting TikToks. Does that make sense? People aren't doing it for fun. You don't need to do it. It doesn't have to happen. You can be a huge artist without TikTok, but as an artist, but it's still happening there. And I think the importance of Spotify playlists is definitely waning, and how people understand how things work. Like Spotify playlists are obviously important. They were God 2018, 20, 2021, something like that. It was all you cared about, right? There was an era, there was a press era for a long time, right? Indie rock was the press era when that happened. Bon Iver, those types of bands, right? Bon Iver, Arcade Fire, those were press bands. They were touring bands. We had a Spotify era. There are a lot of artists who are boosted by Spotify who had these numbers because of playlists or something taken off in the algorithm. Still happens. Those artists don't have the impact on touring in the same way, right? Like touring, record sales, things like that. Being on a Spotify playlist is good. It doesn't necessarily mean you're a big artist overall. Like it can be fabricated. We are now in the TikTok era of music, whether people want to admit it or not. Like TikTok is the most important genre of music. It is what makes songs become huge. And again, there's never been a platform like this that has been a third party that points back to Spotify. Like basically, I could look at almost all of the great pieces of press I've had artists have, and can I see it on the numbers? The answer is almost certainly no. So, but TikTok, you have a TikTok that goes viral. You can look at the numbers and see them in your hands of people going and listening to the song on Spotify. So I don't know if Spotify is less important necessarily, but it is secondary, if that makes sense. It is the secondary goal versus virality. And it's funny, like the term virality, I feel
I
like.
mean, it's still the goal, but TikTok is now the process.
I think that probably makes sense. You want it to happen on TikTok and then go to Spotify.
Because Spotify is still how you monetize the buzz you build on TikTok, right?
Yes. So and selling tickets and things like that too. But yeah, you kind of have to have it happen both places for it to work. And it's not, again, it's not a thing that can be fabricated either. Like there are artists with huge TikToks that do not have successful songs on Spotify. Like just having that piece is not enough on its own. Usually, to be really big, you kind of have to have both, though.
Okay.
But the role of experience is in this t time that I said that I think pop music is now like the most decentralized it's ever been, and music in general that it's ever been. Anybody can go on TikTok right now with whatever song, and it can blow the fuck up, and it has. It's not like a like oh it is a getting lucky. But there are a lot of people who are putting the work into doing it, right? Taking the time to doing this, being willing to put themselves out there, et cetera, and have it happen. And having a track blow up on TikTok, having it point back to Spotify. That is the role of experience where it comes in. And there are a lot of people who are doing that, who are very successful, who have a song, right? Being able to do the next step is the piece that I think has kind of been lost in American culture. And we really found it this year, which is you need to motherfucking grind and have the experience and basically the base, right? The ba we always talk about this, like the base of the pyramid, which is all the other things can happen, but you can't start at the top and build your way down. It's very difficult that way. You have to establish yourself as being a good performer, having a good band, being able to play live, knowing how to tour, having other songs, beyond just that song. And I think that was the thing. When you look at Shaboozey, Shaboozey's been grinding at the shit for almost 10 years. I had a Shaboozey track that I freaking loved way back in the day. And I remember just like a few times being like, it was a song called Winning Streak by Shaboozey from, God, what year was that? Like probably 2016. I was still at Billions when Winning Streak came out. And then all of a sudden I see like Tipsy is out and I'm like, oh shit, this is happening. I didn't even know he was involved with the Beyonce record or anything like that. But like Shaboozey worked to really understand what he was trying to do. We're Winning Streak. Why is it not on Spotify? Did they take that off? If they did, I'd be so disappointed. That's how it feels to have a winning streak, babe. Rocking shit you can't pull off. I think it's gone. Oh my God. Wow. Anyway, it was a great track, but he'd been doing it for a long, long time.
It was released in 2018.
18. Okay. Like Sabrina Carpenter, you were saying that you weren't that familiar with Sabrina Carpenter before this year. Do you know how many albums she's put out?
Three? Oh, wow.
If only that were true.
How naive. Six?
This is her sixth album.
Okay.
That I think the fifth album, The Emails I Can't Send. She was still touring indie clubs, though, on that album. Was the one where it really started to happen. Six albums spread out over the last 9 years. Before she became successful. Sabrina Carpenter was ready for this. Does that make sense? Charli XCX has been an artist in our lives for so long. Charli XCX was ready for this. And then on the flip side, you see people like Tommy Richmond, who I mentioned as somebody who kind of came out of nowhere. I don't want to say that they rushed out a record, but like the record didn't do very well overall. Million Dollar Baby is still a huge song. That's what I was saying about like the pile of money just keeps going when you have a song like that. But long-term career right now, if you were to bet on somebody, probably wouldn't be a great bet. If you were to say, who is a person who's going to be in our lives 5 years from now, 10 years from now? And most of the time, this isn't true always, most of the time, it is the artists who've had to kind of go through the process of understanding who they are, what they want to be musically, what the image is, what the music sounds like, whether they're able to tour, those things, how they want to be perceived on social media, how to use social media, all of those little bits along the way. That is usually the artists who are going to be in our lives long term. And sometimes it can happen. Who knows? Like Tommy Richmond may pop back up 5 years from now and all of a sudden be a little bit more fully formed. But there are people who come out, have these huge songs, and then you're like, what else, right? Like, is this a career artist or is this a song that we're excited about? And experience to me has been the number one thing of almost any artist who's taken off in this last year. Basically everybody, the entire, right? Like Chapel Roan is not quite as long as, not quite as long of a history as Sabrina Carpenter. And Sabrina Carpenter dates back even to fucking like being on Girl Meets World. But like,
Her first EP for Chapel Roan was 2017. There weren't that many albums. This was her first album, but there was a lot of years.
Well, and the story has been very well documented of her being dropped and coming back, you know, like going and figuring it out, basically being like, she was a YouTube artist at the time, which there's probably something about the ability to be a YouTube artist that made her able to transition to the TikTok world, you know, the public performance piece of it. But most artists who have been really, really big this year, even Hozier coming back, right? It was one of those things where you're like, Hozier kind of took a second. He could have relatively easily been considered a one-hit wonder. And then it was like, oh, Hozier's back in our lives. You know, it is something that top hits. It's Lady Gaga and Bruno Mars. You know, there's something about having the experience to be able to do it. And on the flip side, I love the song Austin by Dasha, but seeing her on the CMTs, it was kind of like, she wasn't quite ready for having that big of a moment, and people were being pushed into those big moments really fast sometimes now. And it's almost like the entire experience of being a pop star has been accelerated, and the ones that are able to do it are the ones that find success slightly later. Chapel Roan isn't old. Sabrina Carpenter isn't old, obviously, but they're finding that success slightly later into their careers, and it means that they've had to take time to kind of get to that point.
Do you want to draw a through line for across fields with this?
Well, I mean, I think I personally think it's been kind of like the number one story from the last year overall. And I think the thing that we see is paying more attention to college football, right? All of these people, right? Curtis Rourke, breakout year. Do you know how many years Curtis Rourke has been playing college football?
I believe this is number six.
He's in Cam Rising territory. You know, like the quarterbacks that we see, like if you look at, I was looking at, so two different quarterbacks in particular being one, but I think sports and football overall, I'm curious if this is the case in basketball too. I guess it probably is with a certain notable basketball player. But looking at Ben Baldwin's stats on RBSDM, his CPOE plus, EPA plus CPOE composite, Jared Goff is number one. Jared Goff is the like fucking, he is the Sabrina Carpenter Chapel Rowan of football. Is he not?
I think Sabrina is a, well, yeah, I guess it, maybe you need the Chapel Rowan element of the Rams dropped him from the label.
Yep.
And sent him to Detroit. But yeah, I mean, he's, but the Sabrina element of like, he's been part of our lives for a long time. And it's like, wow, a new appreciation for him this year.
It's not a new appreciation for him. It's he's
a new level of success. Yes.
And so you look at the top 10 and the amount of quarterbacks who, so Goff, obviously very experienced. Josh Allen's probably going on year seven or something. Even Tua is having, like, Tua's not a young quarterback anymore. Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, the only young quarterback in the top, even kind of 16, really young quarterback is Jaden Daniels, who also, Jaden Daniels spent a lot of years in college. Jaden Daniels is relatively old for being a rookie quarterback. Sam Darnold right after that. Sam Darnold's the exact same type of story. Sam Darnold's still young, but that's the role of experience is Sam Darnold found the right place. He took time to understand who he was as a quarterback. There's probably some of the letting ego go as well, right? You're the number, he's the third pick in the draft, fourth pick in the draft. You're getting like pushed into it right away. Quarterbacks sometimes have to eat shit for a while to.
I mean, we saw it with Geno Smith.
He's right there. Sam Darnold, Russell Wilson is number eight. Russell Wilson, Jalen Hurts, Jordan Love. Jordan Love's like one of the younger ones. Mahomes, Purdy, Derek Carr, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Geno Smith. The only unifying thing about these quarterbacks is basically their experience. It's kind of the only through line that you can draw with the top. You know, there's obviously outliers, but if you looked at it and then you look at the bottom quarterbacks, aside from Sean Watson, basically, it's all young quarterbacks in their first, second year, right? At the very bottom is, I don't know how Cooper Rush is, but Cooper Rush, Anthony Richardson, Bryce Young, Will Levis, Gardner Minshew, Caleb Williams, CJ Stroud. Obviously, it's not a perfect line, but because there are some people who, I don't, you'd probably expect Dak Prescott and Trevor Lawrence to be better this year. And there's a cap with age as well, like
Aaron Rodgers, yes.
But to be in that sweet spot of age. And I think it is something that is really underrated in sports. You can do the same thing with college football, QBR, right? The quarterbacks, and it makes even more sense to me in college, right? Which the age difference physically and just experience-wise, if you're coming from high school to college, like, yes, you can be athletic, but the ability to actually do the thing and play the position is a different level. And there are some people, same in music, but you look
DeMond at Williams Campbell, Jr., the exception that proves the rule.
Who?
DeMond Williams Jr.
Yeah, he is. Cam Ward's been at three colleges. Dylan Gabriel's been at three colleges. Curtis Rourke has been at two. Jackson Dart's been around for a while. Sawyer Robertson's been around for a while. Will Howard's at a second school. Jalen Milroe, I think, is in his fourth year in college. Haynes King is on multiple schools. Like Drew Aller's been around forever. That's the top 10 of QBR. Again, basically the only unifying factor for quarterbacks is experience. And it's not even necessarily, there's probably some sort of combination of pedigree plus experience that goes into it. But I don't think it's something that just applies to, like, I anticipate that Michael Penix was, he's ultimately, and same Jaden Daniels, he's an experienced quarterback, right? Like, that was more than being high. I don't know. Jaden Daniels wasn't a massive recruit or anything, was he?
I don't think so.
He wouldn't have gone to Arizona State if he was, right? So that still continues beyond college. it's not just a thing that happens. If you're able to be good over time with experience, and I think that's kind of the unifying factor that we learned in society and arts and culture this year, is you just need some time to marinate. I think it's the same with actors as well. Like looking at film, I know like Dominic Sessa had monster role, right? But it'll be a while before somebody like Dominic Sessa is a large marketable person. You need these points along the way, right? You need like big points, but you can't all of a sudden have one thing and then be like, I'm here, without that level of experience and ability. And I think that's something that was very true in music this last year on a big level, and also true in sports. I think it, to me, it was the number one thing that we saw all fall. I don't know.
Okay. Jaden Daniels was a 4-star recruit, according to ESPN, ranked 44th overall.
Yeah, that's like a fine recruit.
And by the way, the football player, the NFL player on the first ESPN The Magazine Next edition was Cordell Stewart.
Hello.
Flash. Okay. Should we get into my top 10 songs of 2024? Eagerly anticipated.
I'm always like finding out if U2 released a record this year.
Oh, there is an entrant in that category this year. It is not alas, U2. The one honorable mention I had was the song Common Blue by Warpaint, which is vibey, a little like Yeasayer. That was actually the first song I added to my list this year, but it ended up getting pushed out of the top 10 at the last minute.
How as much I do you feel before you go into it is your newfound experience with pop music influencing this list?
It's not that different from past years. I mean, Taylor Swift has been on here like 4 years running. It is not on this year's list. So,
oh, hello.
Yeah. Tough blow for the tortured poets department. Will she ever bounce back? All right. In number 10, this year's entry to the, oh, hey, they put out a new album category that has at least one song that sounds like the old stuff. And that's the Decemberists.
Oh, the Decemberists. I was going to guess Pearl Jam. The Decemberists.
I mean, I don't really have nostalgia for Pearl Jam necessarily. They're before my time. My nostalgia is in that 2003, 2006 sweet spot that you took. I mean, I guess the Decemberists are more recent than that, but you know. Definitely the most classic era Decemberists we've heard in a long time. Also some backing vocals on that from James Mercer, notably.
You feel like that's a long time? I'm going to look up how long ago it was that I considered the Decemberists like return to form record.
Like their last, like notable album.
I think it was the King Is Dead in 2011 was what I considered to be their return to form record. So
okay,
it has been 13 years.
Yeah, I'm gonna take that one. All right, in number 9, I have "This Is Who I Am" by Celeste, who you may remember from Strange, which was featured on the Ted Lasso Liverpool episode. A really terrific use of that song that was very memorable. And I also put her "Ideal Woman" on my 2021 top 10. She still hasn't released a follow-up to that album, but this song came out in the fall, is part of the soundtrack to the show The Day of the Jackal.
All right.
In number 8, have "Just a Western" Boy Harsher remix from Niloufar Yanya. I kept listening to Yanya's new album, My Method Actor, I should say, given how much I've always liked her work. Midnight Sun was number 2 on my 2022 list. Nothing really stood out to me, though, until she released a remix album that had this a slightly different beat that clicked with me a little bit more. At number 7, a song that comes to us courtesy the Pelton Cast Music League on the Discord. So I've been participating in the last couple of weeks. And
what does it look like? What is the Pelton Cast?
So it's a specific letter, and everyone who's participating submits a song for that letter, and then you listen to the through the playlist and can award votes on what are your favorite songs from that that playlist.
Is it the like first letter of the song title?
Correct. So okay. this was off of the songs that begin with the letter C, which I should have technically won with "Come On, Come On" by the Von Bondes.
Oh, but hello.
I forgot to submit my vote, so I got disqualified.
Wow. Wait, hold on. I have to look up the name of that TV show.
What TV show?
The Dennis Leary firefighter show. Rescue Me. There we
is
go.
Is that from that?
It's the theme song. It's not from it. It's the theme song.
I did not know that. Anyway, shouts to the I Will listener, Nathan Holmes, who submitted this song, which immediately cracked my top 10, Crow by Merce Lemon. I felt like there was a bit of a Maggie Rogers vibe to this. So I listened to the entire album. The whole album didn't grab me as much as this song, but I enjoyed this quite a bit.
Yeah, Merce Lemon, I see her on TikTok all the time. I think it could be kind of a big year.
Yeah, she was the one person I thought had a chance of overlapping with your list. Unless you were planning to put the Decembrists because you thought that they're going to be big again in 2025. No, actually, I guess there's someone else who could. Number six, another most recent release from an old friend, in this case, the final release from Childish Gambino. And I have Steps Beach from that album, Bando Stone, and the New World. It's got an island vibe, sort of not unlike the Kawhi album that I enjoyed.
I feel like that album kind of came and went.
I agree.
The I mean the single like Lithonia definitely was around, but you said that he released an album, and honestly, I was like, I didn't even realize that there was a full album by Childish Gambino this
Was it
year.
not in the category of, hey, they put out an album?
But that's sort of the I mean, I remember when you say it, I remember the like moment
Yeah.
that nobody gives a fuck, right? Nobody gives a fuck. Like that was a big deal. But I do feel like the album, that's kind of coming back to my point about pop music though. Like it just can't it can't be fabricated.
Don't know if I would say that. Number five on my list, I have Rain by Wunderhose, which features some tremendously propulsive guitars. There's this song that this sounds just like to me, and it's driving me mad trying to figure out what song it is.
Are you talking
I
about Wonder
even,
Horse?
yes, Wonder Horse.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay.
Typo. I looked online for what people are saying, and the song that they said it reminded them. I don't know, and it didn't sound like to me. So, still trying to figure that one out.
I definitely considered Wonder Horse. I think I might have deemed them too popular and too experienced to be on the
Well,
list,
clearly, if they're
but
making my top 10.
was that the band that you thought could be a crossover or a different one?
No, actually, I was thinking of someone else.
Okay.
All right, number four, a lead interesting to the list. Like, not that I didn't enjoy this song previously, but based on seeing Billie Eilish at Climate Pledge Arena, that propelled Wildflower into my top 10 of 2024. Like, I feel like Billie, like, a lot, like, the fact that there were so many big female pop albums this year, it's sort of there was only so much attention to go around. The Ariana Grande album didn't feel like it had that big of a moment this year.
I'm
Billie
going to
Eilish, what
disagree with you. Are you
do you mean?
going to say that the Billie Eilish album didn't have like a big impact?
It had a big impact, but not quite as big as, some of the hottest albums of this year.
This is one of those ones that we're talking about,
The
like the hotness versus bigness. And
fair.
if we were to do, I probably should have. I feel like Billie Eilish almost gets lumped into a different category. Her music's maybe more too interesting. To be Charli XCX though. I don't know. Probably should just include her. I completely disagree with you though. Billie
Okay.
Eilish is this is like the moment for Billie Eilish. She's number five in the world on Spotify. Birds of a Feather has 1.6
Yeah,
billion
that
plays.
is true. All right, that's fair.
It might have been the biggest song of the year. In fact, that might have been a bigger song, like more streams than Espresso, Birds of a Feather. And how much it's played on radio. I just watched her SNL and I was like, she's fucking got it, dude. Like, Billie
Espresso does
Eilish.
have 1.7 million, so it is still slightly ahead.
When did they come out?
That would have been more recent than Espresso, I think.
Birds of a Feather.
Yes.
They're close. They're close in impact. I think Billie Eilish had a massive year. I don't think it was forgotten. I guess is what I'll
Okay.
say. She sold out two nights at Climate Pledge. They had like all sorts of like anti-scalping processes in place. And again, it was one of those things she could have easily done a stadium on this tour, and probably will next time. Like she's definitely catapulted to that level. It was funny. I saw a photo that the one of the owners of Newmo's posted, and it was when
Yeah.
she opened at Newmo's. Do you see that?
I
I see
saw
them
that
post
too,
it.
yeah.
And like she looks fine, but like the thing that I think people underestimate is how much we retroactively tell stories about artists. if that makes sense. People who seem like they show up fully formed, sometimes we just don't exactly see the moments that aren't fully formed. If that makes sense, this actually goes back to the experience piece, right? Like Shibuzi just appears to the world and you're like, Shibuzi, where was Shibuzi my whole life? You know, like how is this happening in up to this point? Because it feels like he really knows what he's doing, right? Billie Eilish got to a different level of that, but I do think success gives meaning to, here's your Heather's thing. Success gives meaning to everything that you did before you were successful. It makes every step that you made along the way seem like the right step. And that was the thing that I thought when seeing Billie Eilish. I mean, she's obviously like, and her and Phineas as well, but like, was he at the live show? Was Phineas there?
He was not.
Interesting. I was curious about that. But what is there a band? It's a bit.
Yeah.
Okay. But I think Billie Eilish has, I think she is like kind of the perfect combination to me of really fucking good and really famous at the same time. And I'm not tired of her in any way.
That makes sense. All right. Enough on the relative success of Hit Me Hard and Soft. Yeah. Number three on my list, Bodyguard from Beyonce. This was my favorite song off the Cowboy Carter album. It didn't seem like it was released as a single, but definitely one of the bigger songs, but not the biggest, undoubtedly. All right, number two, I have People Watching by Sam Fender. Do you know this one?
I know Sam Fender, but I haven't listened to it.
There's something about this one that reminds me a little of Future Islands, though it doesn't appear that anyone else thinks this looking at the internet. But there's the really obvious comparison is his musical hero, Bruce Springsteen, including the saxophone in the song. And Sam Fender is called the Geordie Springsteen, referring to his upbringing on the northeast, in the northeast coast of England. All right.
What do you think about Jeremy Allen White as Springsteen?
It surprised me.
I feel like it kind of makes sense for it.
You think so?
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like he has kind of Springsteenian energy.
I'm excited for it. Undoubtedly. Do you think that Timothy Chalamet has Dylan-ish energy?
Maybe. I don't. What are the reviews on the movie? It's supposed to be bad.
No, I think it's supposed to be good.
People generally like it.
There's going to be a lot of Oscar nominees from that movie.
Are there really? Okay.
Yeah.
You know I love my boy Timmy all of a sudden. That's fun. I really did not like him. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, actually, you're great. Turns out. All you have to do is be on game day.
I didn't actually get, yes, I've totally changed his perception. I saw a friend of the pod, a third Pelton brother, I should say, Kevin Arnovitz, in LA when I was there over Thanksgiving weekend. And we had to cut our visit to his house short because he was going to see a screen of the Dylan biopic on a studio lot, because that's what he does now as a Hollywood bigwig. All right, my number one song of 2024. Another relatively late entrant, but one that was kind of hard to choose because I had to listen to the album of the same name front to back several times to figure out what was actually my favorite song on it. And it was probably the album I enjoyed listening to the most in 2024, and that's Small Changes from Michael Kiwanuka. And he had, I think, maybe another example of what you're talking about. I had a pretty big song in 2017, Cold Little Heart, but I didn't really know his work until he popped up with this album, and he really hit me all of a sudden.
He's pretty big, but also had like a very massive year.
Yeah. So there you go. There's my top 10 of 2024.
Are you going to make a playlist of these also?
Yes, I will. I've already have the playlist and it will be shared by the time you listen to this. I also, if people are interested in this, I put together a list of all of my top 10 songs over the years. I thought that was interesting to kind of look back on. I mostly did it for the Pelton Cast Music League so that I could see what songs I liked and sort them by letter. But it's good to have as well.
And you didn't do mine, right?
No.
Okay, great.
I can put yours together as well.
God. Okay. I went with, so this is a difficult list in some ways to sort of find the exact right type of artist for. Because I didn't want to go too small, and I also didn't want to go too large. There are a couple who are fairly big on this list, so don't criticize me if the artists are too big or whatever. This is basically like there are a few artists who I think will get into very like massive territory, headlining festivals, things like that, and a few artists who will go from mostly unknown to slightly larger. But the first one, I'm actually curious if you've listened to him. His name is McGee.
Doesn't ring a bell.
Really? Played SNL earlier this year. So this is by far the biggest artist on the list. From Jersey and then LA. He's like pretty due for a massive 2025. Also had a massive 2024, though, beyond his debut album. He's worked with Omar Apollo and Dijon. He's a guitarist, singer, producer. You can kind of hear his influence on the Dijon and the Omar Apollo songs. He doesn't necessarily sonically remind me of Tame Impala, but it's one of those things where, like, when Currents came out, I'd kind of been like, oh, yeah, Tame Impala's fine. And then all of a sudden you hear it and you're like, this is sort of classic rock, but it sounds so incredibly fresh right now. And McGee is basically like, he's definitely, I would say he's number one on the next up in the world of alt slash pop slash rock, you know? It's pretty fucking exciting right now. And he's being played on the radio, being played on the end. So it's going to be a huge year for McGee. It's spelled MK.GE. Number two, I saw him open for Ken Carson with Luca. It's Two Hollis. This might not be the future that you want, but this is the future that you're getting, America. It is Two Hollis. He's the son of a Skrillex manager from Chicago. It's a little dubstep. It gets lumped in with hip hop a little bit. It's sometimes unlistenable and sometimes dope as hell, really depending on your mood. Dope. Two Hollis is the future that young people are looking for. Again, this might not be a PeltonCast listener type of artist. Two Hollis, he's going to have a fucking massive 2025. It's going to be huge. Just signed a huge label deal a little while ago. So
Have
I
you
went.
at any point worked with his dad?
No, I have not. His mom, thank you.
Oh no. I did it. Usually I'm the one catching other people doing that.
You've officially been called out, but
Wow. Oh.
the basically we were going to the show. I was listening to Ken Carson with Luca, and I hadn't listened to it before because please, but like I was like, I am an almost 40-year-old man. Like, this is not music made for me. We were listening to it, and I was like, he can't rap, and the production's terrible, and he can't sing, but it still is somehow good, if that makes sense. Enter Two Hollis also. Right? He doesn't have any of the particular skills that you would ascribe to a successful pop or hip hop artist, but it is going to be huge.
Okay.
And number three is a band called Fuckers out of New York, Fukers. Have you seen this?
Not sure.
They're also primed to have a like ridiculously large 2025. I mean, they're already pretty large as already, but going to be much bigger. There's a whole scene, the Dime Square scene in New York. I wouldn't say that they're part of this. New York is finally starting to happen. People got on it a couple of years ago. The Dare, you're familiar with the song Girls by the Dare?
Maybe, I don't know.
Okay, it's like I'm speaking a foreign language here. Anyway, he produced, the Dare produced a remix, produced a song, and then also a remix on the Charli XCX remix album. And was somebody who had like a massive indie song. This again is democratization of pop music. Signed with Island, so this is not exactly like underground music, but it all came from the indie. Signed to Fire Talk, I think, at first, and became huge. It's like it'll be in every movie trailer for the next 10 years. You're gonna be sick of the song once you start hearing it. Like you're gonna be hearing it over and over and over again. Fuckers is a different side of that coin. Sort of in the post Dare, post Dime Square world of sort of electronic influence dance music, very European, and they've already started blowing up. Like they're going to be the ones who get lumped in with sort of like the dance version of the generation of like Fontaines and people like that. I'm surprised Starburster wasn't in your top 10, by the way. Did you ever listen to that song?
No.
Oh my God. It is like, you go listen to it, you're going to love it. Have you listened to Fontaines at all?
No, I don't think
Massive
so.
fucking year. Probably the biggest current. They're bigger rock bands. They're probably the biggest current rock band, Fontaines. And I could tell you exactly why. Do you want to know?
Why?
Did you see the sketch on SNL that got cut of what people think it's going to be like when you go to Ireland? people with Paul Mescal.
No, I didn't see
But
this. Oh, this sounds terrific.
I think it got cut, and it was people were like, he's like, you have a little bit of Irish in you. He's like, oh my God, you've returned to the motherland.
Oh, this is going to be especially funny after my experience of going back to Italy, which
Going
was
to Italy,
informed
yes.
entirely by the plot of why am I blanking on the name at the HBO show in Sicily? It's coming back next year.
Oh, White Lotus?
Yeah, White Lotus. I had that conversation with
I thought you
like
were
a
thinking of Emily in
dozen.
Paris.
Yes, I had a conversation with a dozen people about the White Lotus episode where they go back and try to see their relatives in Sicily, and it set my expectations very low for that. But this will be great.
Oh yeah, it's really. I think it was cut. It must be on YouTube or something.
I'm sure it is.
But Fontaine's fandom is like the amount of people who are Irish or who have Irish descent and want to love a band that enter Fontaine's DC for you. The DC stands for Dublin City, but
Not District of Columbia. So this is not, is this one of your 10 artists, or is this just
no.
an aside?
Fontaine's are fucking huge. Like I
Okay.
don't. It would be. I mean. They're bigger than McGee is already. Like that is not they are a massive band.
That was just a personal note for me, the listener.
That was an aside. Oh, you definitely should listen to Starburster. You're gonna
Okay.
fucking love that song. Anyway, fuckers, New York. Number four, a band called Sword 2, definitely much smaller than the other ones. A lot of the artists on this list are playing 90s influenced music. We're kind of in that time period. Shoegaze, I would say, is kind of like in the TikTok era, shoegaze has become one of the bigger genres. You can sort of hear it in influence of pop music a little bit too. Nobody's really, really taken off. Wisp is one of the bigger artists kind of in this world. But Sword 2 play kind of an uncategorizable 90s influence of noise and shoegaze, lush and noisy at the same time. They're supporting a band called Feeble Little Horse, who I also consider too big to be on this list, which is a very fitting pair for them. Number five, I have Ben Stiller. This is a little bit cheating. I didn't include any artists that I personally work with, obviously. Coworker does. Ben Stiller supported Fontaines on their US tour, every single date on the US tour. They're signed to Dirty Hit, which is 1975's record label and kind of the modern continuation of Britpop. You know, I think everybody's kind of waiting for the next Oasis came back this year. We didn't even freaking talk about Oasis coming back. But Oasis came back this year. I actually have a thought on that, which I'm going to include in the Ben Stiller section. But, people are still waiting for the next new Britpop band to be massive. And I don't think it's Fontaines. I don't think that's really Britpop necessarily, but people are waiting for a band like that. Ben Stiller from New York. And I think poised for a huge 2025 and beyond. My thought on Oasis. Do you remember when I was in probably 10th, 11th grade, we were playing Risk a lot. You, me, Zach, Mikey were playing Risk a lot. And I became obsessed with Oasis after watching their Behind the Music.
I don't specifically remember that. I don't not remember. No, I don't specifically remember it now.
Wow, you should have been me. It was like the most notable thing that happened that summer to me. Again, I want to say it was summer 2001 or 2002. I went out and bought all three of their first three albums, right? Definitely Maybe What Story Morning Glory Be Here Now. And I was fucking obsessed with them, but it kind of felt like a joke at the time. And it's so strange to me now. It was like I was an alien for caring about Oasis. There was not another soul on earth. Like other people liked you. I see you're not remembering this. I was there in this moment. It was one of the strangest things that I could have done is being a massive Oasis fan in like 2001, 2002.
I
And oh,
suppose.
over time, it felt like it was like, oh, they were like that big British band. You know, I mean, U2 was kind of perceived in the same way also. U2 was sort of like this like ancient band before they came back.
I mean, I Wonderwall was still very central in the culture.
Wonderwall was a big song, but it was almost a joke.
I mean, I agree that probably by this point people thought more of Oasis because of like the feuding between
That was
the
the
brothers.
only story. And again, I watched that Behind the Music and I was like, does anybody know that these songs fucking rule? But I like
mean,
it. It was like a begrudging love for Oasis that happened. It wasn't like mainstream to care about them, if that makes sense. It was like, oh yeah, British people like this band. Americans don't care. We're all up on our fucking Ja Rule Ashanti tip right
I
now.
mean, Champagne Supernova, Don't Look Back
I'm
in Anger.
telling
These
you,
are big
no, you are
songs.
retroactively looking back on this
I'm
as.
not. I have a specific memory of some conversation between us that included Oasis at our grandparents' house.
It was because of
In this
my
era.
Fandom. You nobody like that, this is again that extra 2%. Nobody cared about Oasis. But the amount that people cared about Oasis in the United States, I'll give you this, in Boulevard Park, Washington.
See, I feel like Oasis was at the time way bigger than Blur, who I only knew of from
They
Song
were.
2.
They were way bigger than Blur.
And Song 2's involvement in the game FIFA 98. The
Oh, yeah.
The World Cup game on the soundtrack, or the theme song to that. Whereas then I went back and listened to Blur and I was like, whoa, Blur was amazing. Why were they overshadowed by
No,
Oasis this whole time?
kids are idiots. When we were kids, we had no idea what was going on. Also, we didn't have access to Spotify. Like, we weren't going to go out and buy fucking Park Life. You know what I mean? But I'm just saying, around that time period, the conversation happening around Oasis wasn't like people being like, oh yeah, they're the greatest rock band in the last 50 years. And I'm like, it is so strange how time can change these things. And then a bunch of bands were influenced by Blur or by Oasis and Blur also, but like 2 decades passed and we're like, damn, sure wish we had more Oasises, right?
I also want to note that the coffee and TV video was very viral back in the day.
Oh yeah. So good. Anyway, number six. An artist from Austin called Bo Stallo, spelled Stalloch. He's from Austin at the intersection of kind of like folk and country. Just signed to Capitol, and he's pretty co-signed by a lot of the country industry. And yeah, I don't think he's quite written his like Stick Season or something like that, Something in the Orange. I think those would kind of be like the two sort of closest artists. There are a lot of these artists right now in the way that, like, you know, they talked about like post Nirvana, every grunge band from Seattle was signed. Post Morgan Wallen, Zach Bryan, those type, you know, Michael Marcaggi, a lot of country artists, like good looking young white boy country artists are being signed. And I think to pretty big deals, but Bo Stallo is pretty awesome at it. Once he has a song like that, could be huge. And that's the thing about TikTok is the ability to kind of like sit around with a group of people, play something acoustic, songs jump up a little bit more than production. And I think he's done a very good job of that, which led to a huge deal. So we'll see where it goes after this. But already playing like freaking Red Rocks, supporting Red Rocks. A band called Sunday 1994. Have you heard of this one?
No.
Oh, this is your shit right here. These artists are way bigger than any of the ones I've done in the past. Definitely a more experienced band. I haven't done research and figure out what their background is, but they're from New Zealand and the US. They're a little bit older. It was kind of like a ready-made package from their first single. I think they signed to Arista right away. It was like a self-release, and then they were signed to Arista within a few months. But sort of like, Britpop, I would say slowcore shoegaze, kind of like 90s Euro, is where Sunday 1994 comes in. None of them are British, as far as I know. But this one could be like, they could be a career artist. It could be freaking huge, like the Marías or something like that.
Okay.
At number eight, I have Dexter and the Moon Rocks. Again, I just want to say this is not me co-signing these bands necessarily. This is just, these are predictions, and things that are happening. But Dexter and the Moon Rocks, they are from Texas. This is kind of the generation of, in the way that we had 20 years after pop punk, we now are at a chunk of time after Kings of Leon and after they were a huge band. And you can sort of hear like this is ready-made radio music, huge social following. They're already being played. I think they're like number one on alt radio right now. It hasn't necessarily broken through. Again, in the same way, like monthly listeners, this is the band that's number one at alt radio, but their monthly listeners are under a million. If this were TikTok, if they were number one in any category on TikTok, they'd be at 20 million, right? So all of those things, radio is kind of like the final step that you get. Widespread commercial radio is like, that's when you've finally gotten there. But the Dexter and the Moon Rocks, they could have a very, very huge year. And I think they are most likely to be the band that you will Shazam while you're waiting in a dentist's office.
Well, that's a very specific prediction.
So, watch out for that one. Number nine, a band called Wishy. I don't Wishy maybe at the biggest that they're going to be right now. But Kevin Crowder from Indiana, he has been in a number of different bands. He was in a band called Hoops that you might remember. Then really solo music. Wishy is his newest project right now. At the intersection of like jangle rock, maybe a little bit of shoegaze folk in there. They're kind of like modern Real Estate or something like that. Wishy's had a huge 2024. And the last one I included was a Seattle version of this, and the rapper Oboe Reed. Oboe Reed's had a pretty huge year. He's kind of next up in Seattle hip hop in the following the footsteps of like Dave B, Travis Thompson, people like that, stretching back to Blue Scholars, Macklemore, Gabriel Teodros. Oboe Reed is doing some pretty cool stuff right now, and starting to be recognized quite a bit. I have no idea what the impact will be outside of Seattle long term. But he's somebody who you can listen to his music and be like, oh, this makes so much sense in what is now a pretty long lineage of Seattle hip hop.
Yeah, going back to Sir Mix-a-Lot.
That's it.
All right. Well, there we go.
That was the year. Before we go, I do want to mention every artist I've been lucky enough to work with this last year. And how good of a year it's been in music. It's been very fun. Next year, I want to had an artist win a Grammy for the first time ever. So that was a pretty cool thing to achieve, of things to achieve. Having Tiny Desk would be awesome to achieve in 2025. It would be very fun keeping going. Last year, I guess it was 2 years ago, I went to Red Rocks for the first time. Went to a show at the S Central Park Summer Stage. I'm hoping this year to make it to the Asbury Park Summer Stage, go back to the motherland.
Oh, wow.
That is a fingers crossed hope that happens. But always more to achieve. I think there might be another Grammy nomination in the mix in 2025 for production on the Julian Baker Torres record that was just announced. Yeah, all the artists that I worked with this last year: Christian Taylor, Chokecherry, Eliza McClam, Enum Claw, Hannah Cole, Illuminati Hotties, Hannah Camille, Mercury, Michael Sayer, Pink Shift, and them. Looking forward to another fun 2025. And what the trend will be. I think it's nu metal. I'm not even joking. I actually think nu metal is like back in a way. I think there's going to be modern nu metal bands.
Okay, there you go.
And I personally am
New,
here for it.
it's going to be new metal.
Nu metal. I mean, that's not that far off from what like maybe some of the hardcore bands are doing, but yeah, we're gonna have a nu metal 2025.
We'll be back later in the week with our regular weekly pod, and then still looking to figure out exactly when we're going to drop the year in sports. But we are in year in review season, and always enjoy doing this conversation about the year in music. Thanks so much for listening.